and welcome to the official Leeds United podcast with me, Emma Jones, Matt Lewis and Jermaine Beckford, or Lord Beckford Esquire, according to his name here.
Leeds, 100%.
Surely it's only a matter of time before that's made official.
It's already official, sunshine.
Is it? Oh, right, okay. Oh, no, we said, yeah, you've actually, yeah, I forgot you had that, yeah, yeah. When I come back over for Christmas, shall we both go and visit our land up in wherever the hell it is?
What a great idea.
Hang on, for context here, have you both bought Lord titles? Is this what you're talking about?
But I didn't buy it for myself.
Well, okay, you got bought it for a gift. How much land is it, are we talking, boys? Like, how much square footing?
I think it's about a square foot, yeah.
Okay, so hang on, do you both know where your land is that you could go and stand on and claim it?
Mine's up in Scotland somewhere.
Oh, so is mine.
Maybe it's just cheap land there. That's why they flog it, innit?
Well, yeah, it's probably the top of a mountain somewhere. I ain't going up there.
Do you know what? Can we find out?
Yeah.
Can you find out exactly where it is? We'll throw it out there on the official Leeds United podcast. See if any of our listeners live there. They can go and visit your land and take a photo and send it to us.
And show us what our own land looks like. That's a great idea.
They should be able to get at least 1 foot on it.
And then I'll call police and have them strung them up for trespassing.
Yeah.
Having this riffraff on my land.
Yeah. There's incentive, if you've ever heard it. Now, before we crack on, boys, Matt, I believe it's very chilly over there this time of year, isn't it?
It's a little bit nippy at the minute. I've woke up, it's 8 degrees this
morning. Oh, it must be awful for you, that. Awful. Meanwhile, Bex has got no heating and a tree blocking his drive.
Yep. No heating, no electricity, tree blocking my driveway. Yeah, it's all good. It's all fun and games, isn't it?
So we've caught him in a great mood.
Storm Arwen, is it?
Yes.
Arwen. Storm Arwen it is that we've had here.
I think Storm Arwen is an
you think it was bad for you, Bex. I came home to find my recycling bin gone.
Oh, no.
You think that's bad? I went in the garden and my shed's in next door's garden. Have some of that.
have they given it you back or is it finders keepers?
No, he's not in.
How's your bloody pumpkin patch? Have they made it through?
It's still there. It's still there.
Oh, thank God.
I checked on it today.
Matt, you sounded so concerned. Have they made it through?
Oh, yeah. Gosh. Well, I just know he cares very much for those fellas, so...
I do. I was actually checking on the courgette and kale, but, you know, the pumpkin. Pumpkins are all right as well. Thanks for asking.
Man of the people, Lord Beckford Esquire. Right then, boys, let us crack on. For you listening, I should point out that we are recording this on Tuesday ahead of the game with Crystal Palace, hence why there's no reference to the game. As always, thank you for all the comments that you've been sending in. Wanted to mention one in particular, which is wonderful. Andrea's been in touch, not our owner, saying, hi team. Hi team, cheers for the mention on Moment of the Week. Any chance you can give a shout out to James McLaughlin, CEO at Cure Leukemia? He's running the equivalent of 4 marathons in 4 days in the north of England to raise £25,000. Hashtag Tour of the Top 2021.
Decent. Absolutely lot, decent.
That is wonderful. That is wonderful.
I feel like that deserves a lot more than £25,000.
Okay, chip in.
We should all try and... No, I'm going to donate something to that. That's insane.
Yeah,
4 marathons in 4 days.
That is incredible. Well, that's the kind of thing you do, Beckford.
I know. Yeah, him, not me. I noticed you went straight to Bex there.
That's what I was thinking. Matt, he's super fit, you know.
You've still got that broken leg, haven't you, love?
No, so. I'm all right. I'm all right now. I'm all right.
Okay, we nominate you to do it then.
I'm still not running 4 marathons in 4 days. Yeah. No, hang on. No, yeah, I've still got physio in that. No, I can't. Sorry.
It is amazing.
Yeah, it really is. And please do, as Matt says, send us the link.
When is it?
You're asking me a lot of questions that I have no answers for here, boys. So I'm going to throw that back to you, James McLaughlin, CEO. Oh my God, I've just realised I said Andrea. I thought it was a man. Sorry, Andrea.
No, I think it's Andrea.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Easy mistake to make with the boss.
Exactly. Andrea, can you get in touch again, please, and let us know. Matt would like the link for how we can donate, and Jermaine would like to know when it's happening.
Can he join in?
We'll talk about this again next week. Yeah, can Jermaine join in? Can he join James McLaughlin, please?
I can't join in, but I will throw a retweet out there. And donate as well.
Best of luck with that, James. And like I say, Andrea, please do get in touch with those details. Now then, the 27th of November 2011 is a date that will forever be remembered by football fans around the country. It is, of course, the day we lost true Leeds United legend, Gary Speed. This week, 10 years on, we wanted to reflect on Gary's phenomenal impact on the game, his successes and his time at Elland Road, and hear from people who knew Gary firsthand. Now, Gary came through the ranks at Leeds as a schoolboy, and he went on to cement his place in the club's history, helping Leeds to promotion in the 1989-90 season and playing an instrumental role in Leeds' First Division title success in 91-92. In total, he played 312 games for Leeds, scoring 57 goals, as well as being capped 85 times by Wales in a hugely successful career. First off, we're going to welcome Simon Grayson to the podcast, who signed for Leeds United's Academy as a 14-year-old on the same day as Gary, and who was manager of Leeds in 2011 when the news of Gary's passing came through. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We obviously want to talk about Gary Speed, who we know that you know so well. Big, big anniversary of his passing this week, 10 years on. And we have heard so much talk about not just him as a player on the pitch, but the kind of man that he was. And I think that is the most striking thing. Who was Gary Speed to you? What was he like?
Well, he was young, sweet and innocent when I met him at 14. I think it's quite common that people know that we were sort of signed on the same day as schoolboys. Back in the day, that's the earliest you could sign as a 14-year-old. And the one thing that struck me was that this strange accent, because I'm from North Yorkshire and I'd never heard anybody speak like he did. And he had a soft North Wales accent. But he was such a lovely, humble person, exactly like his parents. Roger and Carol were exactly the same. So my parents went to every youth cup game, every youth game, every reserve game, and they were always there. And so my parents got friendly with his as well. And we shared the bus on many mornings to training and got the same bus home. He was in a different digs to me, but he was just such an honest person, hard-working person, and a fun person as well, because any time there was any pranks that were knocking around as apprentices, there was always one person that was knocking around instigating them all, and it wasn't me.
Yeah. What sort of pranks are we talking about?
Well, things that you certainly can't get away with this day and age. Just things like all of a sudden you'd be in the boot room and the light would go out. So you'd all be cleaning pros' boots and all of a sudden the light would go out and then there'd be like handfuls of boots just flown around the room and hitting people on heads and everything. And you're just like, a minute later, all the boots are off the walls. If you've got black eyes, you've got cuts coming off the back of your head, you just had to take cover. I think one of the big ones was that one of the lads tried to run it. We on Fullerton Park, obviously where the car park is now, we tied him to a goalpost. And this was happening regularly. And he got deep eating, putting parts of his body he shouldn't have done. He had the whole pipe nailed to him. But it was just part and parcel of being an apprentice back in the day, to the point of the next time he got a court case, he started running back to Huddersfield.
I always feel like we have to clarify court case when we're on this show.
Yeah.
For the people who don't quite know what that is.
Basically, it's something that one of the lads had done wrong, sort of stepped out of line, and then they went to a jury. And believe me, I've been in these juries, on them, off them, and I can never remember somebody overturning or getting a positive anything in the favour. It was always right, guilty. So it wasn't a fair court case.
But just to clarify, this is a court case amongst all the other players. Yeah. And he's not off to Leeds Crown Court.
Yeah, yeah. The local magistrates weren't handing out these sort of punishments, that's for sure.
Yeah, I imagine they were far leaner. Is there a specific memory that really does stand out for you, one in particular, Simon?
I think it was just the whole period of him, you know what I mean? I don't think there's one particular time. It was just the way he trained every day, you know what I mean? That he ended up playing the number of games in the career that he did through his sheer dedication. I thought I was dedicated when I played, but he was a different level, and hence why he played in the Premier League the number of games that he did and represented his country. We went on, obviously, to do our coaching badges together on the same Welsh courses, and you could see the dedication both on the training pitch and in the bar on a night time after a long day in the classroom as well. So he enjoyed all that. But no, he just had this personality. He was so humble and easy to get on with. And ultimately as well, he was a good-looking lad, wasn't he? He used to model for Armani, and we were all modelling for balaclavas.
On the pitch, was he one of those players really early on that you knew was going to make it, was going to be a star?
Well, it's strange, really, because we both back then were playing centre midfield, and there was David Batty, a year older in our team. So to start with, I was like the youth team captain, and Gaz was in and out of the youth team. But you could see he had plenty of qualities about him. And then he got moved to the left wing, where he seemed to flourish. And the one thing I've got over Speedo is that I made my Leeds debut before him. He might have played 300 games more than me, but I still made mine quicker than he did. But you could just see that he wasn't arrogant. He was confident, and he had good physique, great in the air, fantastic left foot. It's like when you watch people strike a left-footed shot, it always looks nicer and sweeter and better than a right-footed player, doesn't it? And he just had all that. He just had an aura about him. But it wasn't easy for him as an apprentice and young players, because you had to have a desire and a hunger and a strong character to make it back in the 80s and early 90s, because there were some tough characters in the dressing room, like Vinnie Jones was around at that time. But he knew what he was capable of doing, and he trusted everything that he was doing was going to be the right thing to lead him to where he got to.
On that note, you know, you've got all those big characters around you, as you said, tough characters. Was it nice to have someone that, you know, you came in on the same day, you were kind of going through it all together at the same time?
Yeah, definitely. And we were different type of characters, but one thing we both had was inner desire to be successful. And I think the one thing that we had in common as well, that we paid so much attention to what the more experienced players were doing, and we learned from them. Gordon Strachan was a massive influence on my career, and I'm sure he was on Gary's as well, because of how he conducted himself, how he trained every day, his preparation, even to the point of eating bananas wasn't fashionable back in the day, back then, and Gordon brought that, seaweed tablets and things that all of a sudden you're thinking are quite common these days. Now, Gordon was doing that years ago, and he was a massive influence both on me and Gary, that's for sure.
And Simon, off the pitch, what was Gary like with fans and with his own family? What was he like as a man?
Well, it was a real close family that they had in North Wales. As I said, he'd go back quite often and see his parents, but he'd also like to stay in Leeds and socialise. And that's what you could do back then. You could go out and enjoy yourselves. He'd have time for everybody wanting autographs. When we were 17, 16, we weren't signing too many autographs, but probably talking a little bit later when he was in the first team on a more regular basis. But he'd have time for anybody. I think that was a big thing, that all the clubs that he played for, he had an affiliation to the supporters, because he wore his heart on his sleeve when he was playing, but off the pitch as well, he would have time for anybody to speak to them, talk to them and do anything for them. And that was mark of a fantastic person, which we all saw him as and know him as, rather than just a footballer.
That's so fascinating you say that. When I think of Gary Speed, I always think of Leeds United in the, you know, the old Lee Admiral kit and Evening Post and all that kind of stuff. But like the clubs that he was at, it feels like everyone feels like they owned him. Like everyone felt like he was a club hero, even though, like, you know, like Bolton, for example, he played less than half as many games for them as he did for Leeds, but they feel like he's one of their own. It just feels like a testament to the character and who he was that every club he was at loved him.
Yeah, I think also the football world as well, because on obviously the weekend when it was his 10th anniversary, it wasn't just the clubs that he played for that were acknowledging it. This was like a nationwide thing where people were putting on this, that and other about him. And that's how high regard he was held by everybody, not just the clubs that he played for. And that's, again, testament to the player, but to the man himself as well.
Simon, you speak about the man and the player and how he wore his heart on his sleeve and how he lived life. And there was this perception of just a very successful, happy young man. And I think that is something that in society we still need to work on, don't you? That we see beyond this perceived idea of happiness and what that looks like.
Well, definitely. And you only have to look at Gary for one of the biggest examples. The day before he died, he was on Football Focus doing an interview, laughing and joking with the camera people. I think Dan Walker was doing the interview, and he didn't look or sound any different. And that is the problem that we've got in this modern day now as well, that people are not open enough, don't talk enough and don't share the problems. And it's something that society, football that we're talking about, have to share and get more involved with to stop these things happening again, because should never have happened. Some 42-year-old Gary Speed dying was an absolute tragedy for first and foremost Louise and the boys and his mum and dad and sister, but the football world as well. So that's why it's so important now that everybody should open up. Don't feel embarrassed. Don't be scared to talk to people. Because even if it's a 5-10 minute with a conversation with somebody, it can be relieving and help you out and get you through tough times.
I know that we're still going at a bit of a snail's pace, particularly amongst men, when we're trying to make improvements in that area. But in the last 10 years, you know, you've been in management for a long time now, Simon. Do you see improvements? Do you see opportunities for players to be opening up a bit more? And not just players, actually, backroom staff as well, yourself included. Do you see that it's the stigma is lessening?
I think it's lessening, but it still isn't to where we all want to be, without a shadow of a doubt, because there still needs to be more, because people are still in dark places and still not coming out and talking as openly and as much freedom as they should do and need to do. I've had incidences over a number of years, and recently a player brought down in tears that he wanted to retire and pack in because he was in a dark place. And you don't realise that until this player came to me. And you've got to then realise that it's still a massive, massive issue that people are not wanting to talk, but they shouldn't be scared of talking. As soon as he came to me, I felt a bit annoyed with myself that I didn't see any danger of how he was feeling. But it's like a car. You can't sometimes see what's underneath the bonnet. What's wrong with it, is it? And that's the biggest thing. And individuals have to be there for each other and come out and talk openly.
It's difficult because as a football player wanting to come out and have that conversation with people, you're constantly feel like you're walking on eggshells. You feel like you're being judged all the time. Obviously, when you go and play in football stadiums, everybody's judging your performance. So it's sometimes difficult to differentiate your performance with your personal life. And by reaching out to people, sometimes ex-players, current players, managers, staff, whoever it may be, they find it difficult. They don't want to be judged, but they don't realize that a lot more people are in the same situation. The only time you're ever going to figure that out is by opening up and saying, right, well, I do need assistance. Something's not quite right with me, so I need to speak to somebody just to get it out there.
But the world of football is a brutal place at times because you're on a pitch and you make a mistake, you have a bad game, and social media creates that sort of environment now where people feel free to criticise. But people then don't realise what players are maybe going through, why they've sort of made a mistake, why they've had a poor game, something's happened at home or something's on the mind and they're in a bad place. And that's why people just got to think twice sometimes before they actually criticise people, because you never know what people are going through.
We try and talk about it a lot on this show. I think we do, that it's human beings at the end of the day. You know, footballers are not automatons that just go out there and play for our pleasure. They're human beings just doing a job. And I think that we can all collectively as a society have a hell of a lot more awareness for that.
Yeah, I agree totally. Look, I've been involved in football for 30 odd years, so any criticism that I get at any particular time doesn't hurt me as much as maybe it would do as a young player starting out in his trade now. So I've got used to it. I've got thick skin and that, and I've gone through some good places and bad places, believe me, because of the sort of my career's been up and down as well, playing wise and managing wise. So it's a tough thing that people go through, and think twice. That would be the message when you're thinking of posting something negative about a person, because ultimately they're all human beings, as you said, Matt, and players go out and try and perform week in and week out, try and give 100%, but if they make a mistake, well, so be it. Life's too short to worry about other things, you know what I mean? So be positive rather than negative has always been my motto with players and supporters.
And I think that extends beyond the football pitch as well. Well, it definitely does, Simon, because, you know, we talk about football players, their mental well-being, and often they're open to attack. You know, if they don't have a good game, their performance is scrutinised and sometimes it gets personal. But there'll be a lot of people listening right now who definitely aren't professional football players who will also have the same fears, who have financial fears, who are scared that if they say something at work, they might not keep their job, because unfortunately, not everybody is understanding as the four of us sat in this room right now, this cyber room right now, Do you think that football, because it is such a male-dominated sport, and because fans, the majority, it's great to see there are a lot more females following it, but the majority are men, and we know that it is men that struggle to talk statistically more than women. Do you think football has a responsibility to help people outside of the sport as well to speak up?
Well, definitely. Anytime there's any opportunity to highlight issues, problems, and this openness that we're talking, that we want people to be talking about, then let's do it. And there is no better way of promoting mental health is through football, because so many people watch it, see it, talk about it, read about it. And if we can keep focusing on how easy it should be for somebody to talk and be open about any issues, any dark problems that you may have. Well, let's just keep doing it, because we've got so many tools at our disposal now where you can encourage people to do this. And it's great that you're talking about this on a regular basis, because Leeds United is a worldwide football club. And if it can help, even if it helps one person who's talking about it today, well, that's great. Let's hope that it helps many, many other people who are maybe going through issues.
Last week, weekend's football, we saw it. Obviously, all the tributes were pouring in for Gary Speed. But you saw all of the T-shirts that all of the teams were wearing, you know, promoting opening up.
Andy's Man Club.
Yeah, it's okay to talk. Yeah.
So that's something else that's gone viral, you know. Again, not just for sportsmen and women, sports people, but for the general public as well. Everybody was watching any of those games. They've seen whatever it is. They've clicked on the hashtag link, or they've clicked into Andy's Man's Club, or whichever other ones there are out there. They're just dipping in, you know, just to see if it's okay, just to see how it will affect them.
I hope that is the wider legacy of Gary Speed, isn't it? I mean, beyond his incredible career and his beautiful family, that can be the wider legacy, that people can look at someone like him and go, well, he's a rich, famous, incredibly talented, he's good looking, as we said, and yet he was suffering. And that it's okay. It can happen to any and everyone. And I hope that is what will get people talking.
Absolutely. And as we know, mental health doesn't discriminate. Just as an extension of what you were saying there, Bex, in case you're wondering what Andy's Man Club is, it is a national scheme where you can actually meet up face to face with other men who want to talk or don't want to talk, just want to sit and listen. There are loads of venues all across the country now. They've rolled this out nationally and it's brilliant to see. Just pop it in Google. Or on Instagram and Twitter, you will be able to find them there. They're great guys. I've met them a few times. Exactly what Matt's doing there. That's their symbol. It's okay to talk. I've met them a few times at Ellen Road and they are wonderful. What they're doing comes from a very good place and they just want to help. And boys, Simon, before we let you go, I just want to ask you something. It might seem like a bit of an unusual question, but because you are men and because statistically we know men struggle with opening up, if someone came to you, you three, and said, I'm struggling with my mental health and I don't know what to do. Honestly, how would you approach that? How would you feel and what would you say to them?
Well, as I said, I've had issues with players over the last period of time, and you sit down, you've got to be, you're a soundboard for them, aren't you? You're there to listen for an hour and not say any words. Well, so be it. You just have to be whatever this person wants to do for them. And if you can give any positivity along the way with these conversations, then that helps as well, I'm sure of it. But sometimes people just want to talk to, sometimes probably to strangers that they don't know, because they don't feel like they want to open up to the best friends or anything like that. I'm sure people do that. But sometimes just a stranger can be more relaxing and easy to vent your frustration and your issues that you may be having.
That's it, isn't it? I mean, not trying to do a commercial plug, but my brother and his friend Lee, my brother Anthony, they wrote a film about this. It's a short film called On My Own. And it's the same premise that you just said there, Simon. It's two strangers that come together and they're worlds apart, like in terms of their finances and their, you know, their class and, you know, all that, this kind of like position in life. And yet it's two blokes that actually, when you boil down their insecurities, their issues, it's frighteningly similar. And I think that a lot of times people feel very lonely, particularly as you were saying earlier, Simon, in the current climate that we live in with mobile phones and social media, but we still feel very alone. And it could be as simple as just taking time to actually listen to someone. We have so many conversations where we're opening our mouths, but we're not opening our ears. And if you just take the moment to actually just listen to someone and make them, you know, look, mate, you're not on your own. I know what that feels like. I know what you're talking about there. Tell me more and just listen. I think that is so important for so many people. They just want to feel heard, or maybe they just want to, like Simon said, just unload some stuff. And it's just to be there for somebody.
Yeah, absolutely. You both hit the nail on the head there. It's just being what that person needs. We're all completely different, but yet we're all exactly the same. You know, we all need something slightly different each time. So it's just a matter of sitting down and listening to each individual and seeing what that person needs. And if you've got any words of encouragement or anything, as Simon touched on there, then, you know, give those words. If you've got nothing, but the person's not searching for an answer or a reaction or a response, just be the person they need to vent on, unleash, or, you know, speak to, you know, without judgment. And that's the most important thing, everything without judgment. And just let them know they're not on their own.
Yeah. It sounds very trite, but the old idiom, a problem shared is a problem halved, I find is actually, it's so poignant, because there's the amount of times that, particularly in my career, and I'm sure football's no different, or any career, is that you bottle up this stuff because you don't want to appear to be the only one. You don't want to appear weak or whatever.
Yeah.
And the second you actually tell someone, they go, oh my God, that's exactly how I feel. And you go, oh, so I wasn't the only one. The whole, if I just said that 2 years ago, 3 years ago, we could have been so much more open about this and I would have felt so much better. But we all bottled it in for our own reasons.
Matt, that's so accurate. When you are, there is something really quite liberating about saying I'm not okay and being completely authentic and raw about it and realizing that you're not alone, because actually what that does in turn, in a very weird way, is it puts other people at ease. Other people then go, oh, I'm not on my own, because we have all been there. We have all felt lonely. Matt, Jermaine, Simon, you have all been at the absolute pinnacle, the peak in your chosen careers. And if you've been there, then the three people I'm sat talking to right now, if you've all had your dark times and lonely times, then let that give you, the listener, some reassurance that if you're feeling that way right now, you really are not alone at all. Simon, it has been so good getting your insight into the wonderful man that was Gary Speed, that is Gary Speed. And it's been wonderful hearing you talk so openly and honestly as well. And I'm sure that you have given a lot of our listeners a lot of reassurance just hearing you talk like that. So thank you for taking the time to join us on the official Leeds United podcast. And now you've got more spare time, you can join us a bit more often.
No, anytime, just let me know. I'm happy to do anything for you.
Cheers, Simon.
Thank you so much, Simon. You take care and have a lovely Christmas. Thank you. It was really, really good that to hear Simon talk so honestly and openly. And lads, I just want to get your thoughts and your memories about Gary Speed. How do you remember him?
Do you know what? From the people that I've spoken to, because I hadn't had an opportunity to actually meet him face to face, which was, it was quite disappointing, obviously, knowing how much of a legend he is, not just for us, but for every club he represented. And hearing the stories about him, his persona, how laid back he was, how softly spoken, kind, generous. But watching him from on television, watching clips on YouTube, which is something I always used to do. I used to watch clips of every single football player. But when a certain name keeps on popping up, you pay more attention to it. And his name is one of those ones that continue to pop up. So, you know, having a look at his clips on YouTube, on Sky Sports and bits and pieces like that, just seeing how he graced the football pitch was nothing short of majestic. Like really, really, he just floated over the pitch. Every time he had the ball, left foot, right foot, header, his timing was brilliant, his finishes were great. But outside of actually playing, just listening to what people had to say about him, you know, that left a more of a lasting impression on me. You know, that's the kind of thing I would like to do. I would like people to speak about me in the same sort of way that they speak about Gary Speed, you know, about how genuine he is as a person, how open he is, how honest he is, how he's got a lot of time for everybody that he came in contact with, everybody he encountered. It's just amazing. Just an all-round amazing person.
I mean, how does one add more to that? I mean, that's kind of it really, isn't it? I mean, he was career-wise at Leeds was a little bit before my time, and yet it's also a player who I fully just envisage in a Leeds shirt. It's a kind of symbolic with as part of the club. It's that doesn't happen to a lot of players. You know, especially, you know, he wasn't a one club man. He wasn't at Leeds for his whole career, far from it. But there's just something about his, you know, the long hair and that white shirt and the fist pump. And when I think of, there's only a handful of players who I think of like that. And I think Leeds and Gary Speed was one of them. And, but then beyond his career, because, you know, we already talked about how every club he's gone to seems to have that same impression that I've got with him. You know, whether it's Newcastle fans or Bolton, whoever, they're just like, oh yeah, he's Newcastle, whatever. But beyond, you know, beyond football, like Beck said, it's one of those things you just wish that people would tell other people how they felt about them while they still could. Because all of this outpouring of love that happened immediately after he passed away and is still happening now 10 years later, I just wish he could have known. You know, and maybe he knew some of it, but he couldn't possibly have known all of this because, as Simon said earlier, the entire world of football was devastated by it and is still devastated by it. And you just wish that we'd all been able to voice that before. And so, again, we talk about legacy. Maybe that's a bit of it as well, that it will just remind people that if you feel a certain way about someone, even if it's just, you know what? I really like you. I think you're a good guy. Let's just say it. Do you know what I mean? Like, just say it, because we use that phrase a lot as well. Life's too short. But everyone seems to have had a good word to say about Gary Speed, and I wish that everyone had had an opportunity to tell him. That's all I can really say.
You're right. There are so many people who he has left his mark on, a wonderful mark in one way or another. Let's hear from some other people now with their memories of Gary Speed, starting with Liam Cooper.
These days creep up on you, and you're reminded of such legends, and Speedo was one of those. He was an unbelievable player, an unbelievable man by all accounts, and people never know what somebody's really going through, and in this case it was too late. It's really sad, and we urge those people to speak out, but it felt really fitting to be here today, and fitting to be able to remember Gary in the game on Saturday as well. Today's a day to reflect and remember how much of a good man he was and how much of a good footballer he was as well. May he rest in peace.
Hi, Mel Stirland here, former Leeds United fullback. Gary Speed, David Batty. They was in the team when I was playing. Absolutely magnificent footballers. Gary, a genius. Play anywhere. Good looking, but could play anywhere. Never troubled anybody. As a manager, they must have loved Gary Speed because he had some great football clubs. But what a player for Leeds United. Talented, so sad, but memories. And he's a diamond. Totally missed. And what a player, what a manager. Love you, Speedo. I know you're watching Leeds United now, pal. Fantastic guy. Love you.
Guys, people have also been reflecting on the importance of talking and supporting each other when you're feeling down, which is something we've spoken a lot, obviously, about on this podcast. It's something we're huge advocates for. And it was great to hear Simon Grayson agreeing that talking is the most important thing. And in the same vein as what you said, Matt, earlier about Gary, you know, you wish he'd had the chance to hear all of these things. I wish that he'd spoken and realised that there was going to be no judgment. I wish that he had reached out for that help, because there is no judgment. And more often than you realise, people do just want to help you, don't they, Matt? You are not a burden.
But yeah, and it's about creating the environment where people know that. And that's what we need to do. And that's where I think we are improving. But we've got a ways to go. And I wanted to ask Bex, actually, just on that note, do you think that potentially there's more that, because you and I have spoken about this previously, do you think that there's more that clubs can do, whether it's for the players themselves who are currently playing, but also potentially more for people upon retirement, you know, re-entering civilian life, as it were. I mean, do you think there's more that can be done there in terms of, if not setting people up, maybe a player's had to retire early, or maybe it's their end of their career, but they're still very, very young, you know, mid-30s. Mm. Like, do you think there's more to set them up for a future, or also just to rehabilitate?
I think so. And I think it needs to start at grassroots level, the younger age groups. So when you go into a football club, you sign a contract right there and then. You should have somebody else in the room with you when you're signing a contract. And it should be somebody that's a third party person employed by the club, but to look after players' mental mindsets.
Can be employed by, but isn't independently sort of regulated to look after the players. Right.
Exactly. So the reason I say to do it from a young age is so that the stigma behind it, the ego from the kid hasn't grown into something that says, I don't need help. I don't need anybody's assistance in this. Kids are programmed a certain way. So if they do something while they're young, it's normal right the way throughout their life. So if you start this and say to them, look, let's open up. Talk to me about how you're feeling. When the manager left you out of the team, what did that make you feel like? If you do something like that from a young age, it sticks with them right the way throughout. So when they get a little bit older, they start to understand, right, well, okay, I'm not in the team this week. And I'm just talking about sports people. This could be any walk of life. I'm not in the team this week. I wonder why. I need to have a chat with somebody. Right, let me call so-and-so. So they call whoever it is and they say, right, I'm not feeling great this week because I'm not in the team. Can I ask you a question or two and then get your feedback on it? And it's just a normal conversation between two people. There's no judgment. There's no preconceived thought process on it. It's just a normal scenario, a normal situation. And that's what I feel we need to do. We need to normalize. Opening up to people and discussing and talking about thoughts and feelings and emotions.
Yeah.
Because they're things that every single person has without judgment. That's my key. I love that phrase, without judgment.
Yeah, we've come a long way, but we still do have a long way to go. Just finally, lads, I want us to hear from someone who knew Gary Speed very well. Here's Bryn Law.
10 years ago, I was standing in pretty much exactly this position before the sun had risen by the Bremner statue outside of Ellen Road. And the reason I was here at 5:30 in the morning was that I was reporting on the death of Gary Speed. Now, Gary, as someone I had covered as a reporter of Leeds United, and someone I'd worked with closely when he became the national team manager of Wales. But more than anything, I counted Gary Speed as a friend. And I was standing here that awful, awful morning to report on the death of a friend. And in the most tragic circumstances imaginable, nobody could comprehend what had happened. And as I stood here before the sun had risen, people kept coming, bringing flowers, placing any sort of memento by this statue here, just because they wanted to be here, to be in the presence of the stadium, to make a gesture, a symbolic gesture, that just showed how much they felt they'd lost when Gary had gone. And it was indicative of the way that he was appreciated by fans at this football club, but not only at this football club, every other club that he represented, and way beyond that as well, in the game itself, almost you might say in society, that there was a huge outpouring of grief at that time, as nobody could quite understand what had happened here, that this talented, handsome, friendly, nice young guy had taken his own life. It was just too much to try and take in. It was just too much to try and comprehend. But that's what I tried to do over the course of the hours that I stood by this statue reporting on this. And ultimately for me, it became too much as well, because I actually broke down. It was live television and I couldn't go on, I couldn't carry on, and I couldn't say any more. And we're still standing here now asking the why, and we're still standing here now having conversations about men's mental health in particular. And I think that's one of the key aspects of this tragic, tragic event, is that we have to have these conversations and we have to try and work out the why so that we prevent these things happening again in future. I never would want to be standing in that position again, reporting on the death of a friend. I wouldn't want to be in the position again of bumping into Gary's dad, Roger, the following weekend at Goodison Park in reception, somebody I knew well from the years of being friendly with Gary. And that meeting will live with me forever when I saw Roger and we embraced in the reception at Goodison Park. Terrible, awful, awful moment, because he just looked a broken man, because he absolutely doted on Gary. So that is the why. That's the thing that we have to try and tackle here ultimately. But we also must remember a footballer who had a massive impact on this football club, who had a massive impact on the international team in Wales, who was loved and adored at every club he played at. And in the days following Gary's death, I attended a game here at Elland Road, and it became the memorial game, if you like. And at the end of the match, I was standing in the tunnel, and Patrick Kishinorbo, one of the Leeds United players that day, came over, saw me standing there, and handed me this. And that was the armband that every player wore on that day, in that game at Elland Road. And I'll keep this for the rest of my life as a memory, a very black memory, but a memory of somebody who I called a friend and who we remember on the 10th anniversary of his terrible, terrible passing this weekend.
A really fitting tribute that, wasn't it, from Brinlaw, who became, as he said there, good friends with Gary Speed. He knew him well, and we all remember how emotional he was when that news broke. So thank you, Bryn, so much for sharing that with us. And thank you guys as well. You know, we thanked Simon earlier, but thank you, because to a lot of people listening, they will have followed your careers, they'll follow you as people. And in the same way, Matt, that you said, you know, we felt like we owned Gary, they will almost feel like they own you too a little bit. Because of your association with things that they love. So thank you for being so open and honest. You do not know who you might have helped today. Now, before we go, there's just time for us to look at the moment of the week with Boost Drinks. First up, I know everyone is going to agree with this one. And we talked about Kevin Sinfield's ridiculous attempt to run 101 miles in 24 hours last week, didn't we? He was aiming to raise money for Leeds Hospital's charity's bid to build a Rob Burrow Centre for Motor Neurone Disease in Leeds and the MND Association. Well, lads, he did it. He raised a whopping £2 million, taking the total that he's raised so far to an incredible £5 million. That is
amazing. Is outrageous. That is
Last year, I had the pleasure of meeting Rob's doctor, Dr. Jung, and she had this wonderful idea for this care centre. And because the current one is absolutely just not fit for purpose whatsoever. And she had these big ideas, really optimistic, and she was talking about how much it was going to improve lives and how wonderful it was going to be, and it all sounded great. And I just was like, well, how much is it going to cost? And she was like, it's going to be this. And I was like, yo, okay. But she went, I don't care. I believe that this is good. This is meant to happen. I was meant to meet Rob, and this is going to happen. And, you know, I had that faith in her. I believed her. But I didn't see how they were going to get there. Enter Sir Kev Sinfield. I can't believe it. They really are going to get it. They're really going to get it. They're going to do it. We're going to have the Rob Burrow MND Care Centre in Leeds. It's going to be absolutely fantastic. I can't wait.
Yeah, truly remarkable. Now, our first moment of the week suggestion came in at the 11th hour from Sarah, lads. She said, seeing Pat turn out for the under-23s was my moment of the week. We need him out there on the pitch, and fingers crossed his next appearance will be for the first team. I think you're in a room full of people who agree here.
Oh.
Here we go.
He did, but it was offside, and it was a screamer, to be fair to him. I'll give him that. However, there is something I agree with her with. Turning out for the under-23s, I'm buzzing that I saw Luke Ayling play 45 minutes, you know, and he came through it relatively unscathed as well, which is always a good sign. Obviously, I like seeing Pat play the full 90, yada, 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 but it's Pat, you know.
But it's Pat!
I can't give him too many props.
He only had a bloody knock on his ankle.
I know, small one. Mate, you broke yours. Exactly. Don't see you moaning and complaining.
No one's giving me moment of the week.
Moaner of the week.
Yeah. Hold your vents in, and the next time he joins us on the official Leeds United podcast, you can air your feelings to Pat himself.
We'll
okay.
Give it to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Now, last week on the podcast, we spoke to Steve Wignall, chair of Marching Out Together, and our next suggestion relates to the Rainbow Laces campaign, which kicked off last weekend. Simon got in touch to say, seeing clubs up and down the land signifying their support for the LGBTQ+ cause was so uplifting. The support of those in the game will make a real life change, marching out together. And I think that's quite fitting, actually, for what we've spoken about this week, about the responsibility that football has in society to make sure that we're talking about everything.
Precisely. And I think that actually the two things can go hand in hand, because you know, if someone is struggling with their sexuality or their identity or whatever it is, that can very, very easily lead into mental health issues. You know, people will be suffering mentally through that, and then the stigma of society still around it. That can all feed into those negative thoughts and emotions. And again, it's about sharing. And perhaps some people don't feel ready, but by doing what happened this weekend, by everyone wearing the armbands and displaying the flags, it is showing to some people, and hopefully one day all people, that we are creating an environment where you can feel free to be yourself and express yourself, and therefore we can hopefully tick off two major issues of just coming out and talking and being honest.
Agreed. So, well, I think I know then, boys, who's going to get your vote, but are we going with Sarah, who spoke about the fact it was great to see Pat playing for the under-23s, or Simon?
I would say Simon's with a twist. Sorry, Sarah.
Sarah's was a good one, but yeah, I'm going to go with Simon.
Simon, congratulations. You've got yourself a crate of Boost drinks. Please do keep your moment of the week suggestions coming in using the hashtag LUFCpod. Lads, thank you so much, as always. That is it from us this week. Thoughts, as always, with all of Gary Speed's family and friends. And remember, it is okay to talk. And as well, the Andy's Man Club. If you are wondering what it is, go to Google, have a look. They are there. You can talk to them. People are there for you. People want to hear you and they want to help. Thank you, as always, for listening. We'll be back next week, hopefully, to chat about two victories for the Mighty Whites. Let's finish with some words from Andy Cousins, who knew Gary Speed very well.
Gary Speed, wow. 10 years, unbelievable, really, how quickly that's gone. What a man he was. You know, my kind of memories of Speedo as somebody outside of the football side of things was, you know, he was always there looking after people. He was always there to talk to people. He was always in the middle of everything, everything which was going on, having a laugh, having a joke, having a big, big smile on his face. But as a footballer, what a player. You know, I think every club he went to, you know, he was an absolute legend. You know, Newcastle, Everton, you know, obviously Leeds to start with, and that you know, that winning team, he was pivotal in, and was very, you know, a huge influence in all the young boys' careers coming through. You know, as I said before, he always had a big smile on his face, and that's how I personally will always remember Gary Speed. And you know, I think a lot of people will also remember him in that way. His wedding, you know, down in Chester was a great do. We all went down there, and Gary being Gary, you know, looked after all the young lads, you know, got us all hotel rooms, got us all sorted, make sure we were all right, even though it was on his big day when we all turned up. He was around us, you know, us lot, making sure that everybody was okay. And that's the big heart which Gary Speed, you know, had. Sadly missed by everybody. You know, every football club he's been to and every supporter who knows Gary, I think, would say it's the same. God rest his soul, and I'm sure that he will be remembered in all the football clubs, you know, on the 10th year, which is a very, very scary thing to think about, that it's been 10 years now that, you know, Gary's been gone.